south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's see how many wokesters we can piss off today. Yes, believe it or not, woke people do listen to this show, judging by the occasional bits of hate mail I get. Question is, why do they keep on listening? Is it because they think they're going to cancel me? Well, maybe. Anyway, here's a first. Listen to this email. Nope, it's not from a wokester. Far from that. But it certainly is a first for me. Listen to this. It starts, Dear John, I'm a Native American from California who wants to get out of Dodge too. If you want my opinion, 90s California was Baywatch and 2022 California is Bumwatch. I'm not talking about bum in the British sense, you know, rear end. I'm talking about street people type bums. Then he says, John, the ability of humans to destroy paradise, in this case, California, is staggering. There's an old cliche that says success happens when preparation meets opportunity. Well, I've been prepared for a long, long time, almost since I've been born. And now I have the opportunity to get the f*** out of Dodge. I'll bet most people under 30 don't even know what Dodge is. A metaphor, of course, but there are plenty of Native Americans hanging around Dodge, you know, too, watching woke, mostly white guys destroy themselves and the upcoming generations, too. He says, hopefully, I will be signing up for your next seminar. Have you had any Native Americans at your seminars yet? Then he says, to another point, you sometimes talk about going off the grid, John. You know, we wrote the book on it. He's right about that. He signs it Robin Whitefeather. That's odd. I thought robins have brown and red feathers, but what do I know? Oh, and there's a P.S. He says, ironically, though we invented the peace pipe, not many of us have the cigarette habit or smoke tobacco ourselves. He says, we all coughed too when we first tried it, so we knew it wasn't good for our bodies. It was always intended to be ceremonial, not a bad habit. So, ironically, cigarettes and tobacco are the gift that keeps on giving, our subtle revenge on the white man. All right, Robin, thanks for that. Yep, you're right. Your email's a first. I've never had anyone write me saying that they're explicitly Native American. And as far as having Native Americans attend my seminar, well, over the years, I could have had a few, but they never said anything about it. So I don't really know. And of course, these days, lots of people have mixed blood, little piece of this, little piece of that. The fact is, as far as seminar attendees, I've had every race, creed, and color. Though, Robin, I do like that bit about tobacco being karmic revenge against the white man. Never considered it, but it is a good point. It's killed millions, for sure. So that makes two distinct indigenous curses on the white man. Tobacco and good old Montezuma's revenge. Hey, you learn something every day, huh? That reminds me of a Thanksgiving Day Plymouth Rock meme I saw not so long ago, showing an Indian handing a pilgrim some food and a turkey. And the caption below said, quote, this is the first known instance of Americans giving free handouts to illegal aliens. Yeah, life's full of paradoxes and ironies, all right. By the way, regarding scheduling of an upcoming Expat Insider seminar, by popular demand, I'm thinking about doing it in the Dominican Republic, the DR, depending on the number of people who'd like to go to a seminar there. So I'm taking a poll. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. If you think you'd like to attend an Expat Insider seminar in the DR in the fall. All right, moving on. You know, I never really recommended Ecuador much as a good Plan B destination. Though, 10 or 15 years ago, it wasn't a bad idea until expat and retirement rags like International Living started promoting it as a number one retirement destination. That's when I knew it was a kiss of death, at least for people like me. And other expats who'd like to avoid the gringo rush and all the distorted secondary effects that come with it. One of the reasons I mention Ecuador once in a while is because it has been, in the last few years, such a popular gringo destination. The thing is, it was a great place a while ago. It is, or was, pretty laid back. I always thought if I lived in Ecuador, I could make a decent go of it and be pretty happy. Though, for sure, I think I'd live in a small town or way out in the boonies, because I'm not big on mixing with gringos all the time. However, these days, In fact, just recently. It seems to me, from what I hear from all my friends down there, they say a huge portion of the gringos that are landing are definitely woke. Some even dyed-in-the-wool socialists. I can see that's true when I look at certain blogs and op-ed pieces coming out of the English language rags in places like Cuenca. Man, I'll tell you, in the questions and comments sections, you got some real wokesters there. And when some other gringo or expat living down there tries to call him out on it, they instantly call him a racist or a Trumper. Well, all I can say is be careful what you wish for. Those gringo wokesters are getting what they asked for, a steady march towards socialism and worse. Because the place, the whole country, has been on an indigenous-led national strike for the last month. In fact, there's a huge call by the large indigenous community for freebies and handouts, though they don't call them that. They claim they've had the short end of the stick for so long, they're owed that by the government. And I know that's true, but the government's so broke and corrupt, they can't afford to give anything extra to anybody. Not that all governments aren't corrupt, they are. But in Ecuador, it's coming to a head. Yep, chaos reigns and gringos and expats are now feeling it too. Now, I know you haven't heard much at all of this in the first world press, but if you haven't heard about it, you'll know that President Guillermo Lasso is under huge pressure to negotiate an end to the strike, a nationwide strike that's shut down most basic services. If you know anything about Ecuador, they've got a big indigenous population, and just in the last couple of years, they've organized and become militant. Now, what these indigenous strikers have done is they've given the president an ultimatum, 10 demands that they say must be fulfilled with no compromise or they won't call off the strike. Their leader says they won't even negotiate. They'll bring the country to its knees. So who's in charge of the strikers? Who's laying out the demands? Well, there's a group called CONAIE, C-O-N-A-I-E, stands for the Confederation of Indigenous Nationalities, and they've been wreaking all kinds of havoc. So right now, I'm going to read you those 10 demands, and you tell me what you think. Now, remember, that consortium of indigenous groups says there will be no compromise. They want all these demands met. Number one, fuel subsidies. They want the government to reduce and freeze diesel at $1.50 a gallon and gasoline at $2.10. In other words, they want a massive government subsidy. And how do you get that? Especially when a country's broken in debt like Ecuador. Well, every country's broken in debt. And since they use the U.S. dollar, they can't print their own. The U.S. is the undisputed champ in that department. So being broke, extremely indebted to places like China and virtually bankrupt, Ecuador can only do one thing, raise taxes dramatically on everyone. And that's the last thing the indigenous people want. Obviously, their leaders have never taken Econ 101. Number two, they want a debt relief program. They want what they call economic relief for 4 million indigenous families, with a minimum one-year moratorium on debt, mortgage, and loan payments, along with the renegotiation of debts with interest rate reductions across the board. Plus, they want the elimination of the seizure of assets such as houses, land, and vehicles for non-payment of bank debts and loans. That means they're asking their Congress to rewrite the country's banking laws. Are you getting this? That also means every landlord who's got tenants behind in their rent will be screwed. But it gets worse. Number three, they're demanding government subsidies for food. They say they want reduced prices for foods such as milk, rice, bananas, onions, fertilizers, potatoes, corn, tomato, all the basics. Number four, they're asking the government for a guarantee of sustenance, whatever that means, for millions of campesinos and small and medium farmers and flour producers. By the way, Ecuador is one of the top exporters worldwide of flowers, you know, like roses. Number four, as far as health and education, they want free, guaranteed higher education for the youth, the indigenous kids. Number five, the mining sector. They're demanding a moratorium for all mining and oil extraction. By the way, with all the other subsidies they're demanding from government, that'd be shooting themselves in the foot because the mining and oil production sectors are the government's biggest cash cows. In a way, you know, that's just as stupid as Biden and Trudeau canceling oil pipelines and leases up where you live. All right, number six, called collective rights. The coalition is demanding respect for the 21 collective rights, whatever they are. Number seven, regarding privatization of government-owned enterprises, they want to halt privatization in all government sectors. Number eight, and this is known to kill any economy, they want price controls. They want price controls on all the basic necessities of life and all the products in supermarket chains. Yeah, right, the food producers and supermarkets are really going to love that one. Number 9, as far as employment and Social Security and health issues, they demand a government pay off its debt to the Social Security and health care system. I believe right now the national health care system's in debt to the tune of around $500 million. So you might wonder, how does that happen when everyone who's on the books, that is, pays into the system? In fact, it gets directly deducted every paycheck. Turns out, just like Social Security in the U.S., government doesn't keep that money separate. It goes into a general slush fund, and thus the entire Social Security and healthcare system is broke, bankrupt. There's nothing in the fund. Number 10, the issue is safety and crime. They're asking for protection from the wave of violence, contract killings, delinquency, drug trafficking, kidnapping, and organized crime. That sounds reasonable, right? What governments are supposed to do, but they don't. All right, there you have it, and pretty much why Ecuador has been shut down for the last month. The simple lesson here is that people want something for nothing. And it's even worse when two different cultures are living side by side, and one of them has had all the advantages, and the other treated like second-class citizens. The Latinos versus the indigenous people. That's an age-old story. Where have we heard that before? Though it seems like the common man, and even some smart people too, can never get it through their heads that government can only give back to the citizens what it takes in tax revenues, plus oil revenues and mining fees in Ecuador's case, and what it borrows from the World Bank, the IMF, and the Chinese. Yeah, the Chinese, the third world's addicted to Chinese money. Like half the world, Ecuador's in big-time debt to the Chinese. Anyway, the top dog indigenous guy in charge of this group, his name is Leonardo Iza. He said over and over again he won't even go to the bargaining table to negotiate until all 10 demands are met. By the way, you know, I've lived in Central America a long time. All those countries except Belize, Costa Rica, and Panama have quite large indigenous populations too. And I'll tell you, most gringos and expats who live down here, we like and respect indigenous folks. They work really hard. However, they've always been considered second-class citizens by the regular Latino folk and thus continuously gotten a raw deal. And of course, us gringos, expats, Latinos, and indigenous people want peace and tranquility. And we want those indigenous folks to live sustainable, happy lives, of course. But believe me, there are no dusty piles of money sitting around in any Latin American's central bank. They're all completely broke, just like the U.S. and the rest of the first world countries. In fact, technically, they're all bankrupt, but you knew that already, right? The dominoes are falling. I'm sure you're aware of that. Oh, and another thing. What a lot of people don't seem to realize is that many of Ecuador's present problems are hangovers from the wonderful, corrupt, socialist ex-president Correa years. You know, he's in exile, right? Hiding with his millions in Switzerland. There's Interpol warrants out for him if he travels. And if he gets extradited back to Ecuador, he's going to jail and they'll throw away the key. But he'll never end up back there because his wife is a Swiss citizen, so he's protected under Swiss law because he's a white-collar thief. Well, so far, anyway, he's only been convicted of graft, corruption, and stealing millions from the government trough. But hey, isn't that what presidents are born to do? Now, if somehow you're thinking it really can't be that bad in Ecuador for gringos and expats, even as the indigenous population takes to the streets, they live in nice areas, they have enough dough, another level of dough compared to what indigenous people earn. Well, you know, even at that, basic services are breaking down, and politicians are getting desperate. There's a YouTube video that just came out with Cuenca Mayor Pedro Palacios pleading with the federal government and indigenous leaders to resolve the strike because he says in Cuenca, we are in an unsustainable situation, a situation where we live in almost complete isolation now due to the strike. Lives are at risk, he pleads, specifically asking strike leader Leonidas Iza to open the highways to allow supplies to enter the city. His plea to this indigenous leader, Iza, was in reference to a huge truck convoy that stalled on the highway right outside Cuenca. Anyway, he urged the indigenous people who set up the roadblocks to allow ambulances, trucks with medical supplies, LP gas, and food to pass through. The immediate problem is clinics and hospitals, with at least two hospitals saying they're going to run out of oxygen if they don't get their supplies like yesterday. Turns out just this Sunday, the police tried to clear that highway where the trucks were all stalled, but withdrew following some violent clashes with indigenous strikers. Oh, and how about this? There's a zoo in Ecuador called the Amaru Biopark Zoo. They're asking for public help to feed the hungry animals. The park says the strike has cut off all needed supplies and needs food donations immediately. In this article I've been highlighting, they've got some graphic and very sad pictures of some of the animals at that zoo. You know, I've never thought zoos were a good idea, especially in the third world. What idiot politicians spend money on a zoo when the public doesn't even have dependable, clean water? You know, Einstein stated there are two things that are infinite, the universe and human stupidity. Meanwhile, there have been many conflicts and violence between police and striking roadblockers, where police have fired tear gas at groups of rock throwers. Now, you've heard me mention before that the people of Latin America depend on propane gas for cooking and, for those who live in the high mountains, heating. The propane shortage during the strike has caused people over this last weekend to line up in huge numbers outside of propane gas distributors, where they're limited to one tank or one tank refill per customer. And there are block-long lines of cars waiting to get their gasoline fill-ups, too. Now, as far as food supplies, you know, those big public mercados where the local indigenous people bring in the food every morning, they say they're still pretty well stocked, but in contrast, most supermarket chains are completely out of fresh vegetables, fruits, meats, etc. By the way, the big open public market thing is about to change for the worse. You see, indigenous vendors there, comprising probably 75% or more of the market sellers, they announced they'll go on strike Monday and shut the markets down. Oh, and what might be worst of all is the garbage pickup will be intermittent, spotty at best. By the way, one economist did the calculation and announced that the reduction in fuel prices that the group is asking for will amount to a $250 million subsidy per year. All, of course, coming from where? Raising taxes? If the government even hints that it has to raise taxes, they'll be asking for another giant strike. So, who wins here? By the way, this is not by any means the first time this has happened in Ecuador. Roadblocks, strikes, and they're called huelgas down here, happen here and there in every Latin country. However, they almost always only last a day or two, and they rarely lock down a whole country, much less a whole city. I remember two or three times driving in El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Panama, and suddenly you're in a big line of traffic that's completely stopped. Why? Because some protesters are blocking the road, chanting with signs and all that. In fact, I remember during a big teacher's strike, of course they were striking for more pay. I sat in front of a roadblock for about an hour and a half, but as these things usually go, they only have the strike or huelga for a couple hours. In fact, you'll usually see the announcement on TV or in the paper. It'll say, tomorrow afternoon from 3 to 6, it'll be a huelga on so-and-so's street or streets. And believe me, unlike what's happening in Ecuador right now, strikers, etc., and other Latin American countries will only block one or two major streets. That's it. Most always, of course, in the capital city, where it'll surely piss off politician wives and mistresses inconvenienced when they miss their health club and beauty parlor appointments. Anyway, what I'm saying is there are strikes and roadblocks throughout Latin America at any given time. They're almost always small and isolated. Sure, they're inconvenient if you have to use that street. On the bright side, at most they last a day or two, some of them only a couple hours, and they're pre-announced in the media. So you can stay home that day or just don't go down the route that they're blocking. And the usual result? Well, the government negotiates. They make a deal. But you know how those sociopathic, liar-ass dickheads lie. They make big promises, but with no money in the treasury, nothing generally happens. Unless they can shove it on the backs of the average businessman. I'm talking about the businessman who's on the books, who has to abide by the labor laws. So, for example, let's say it's the maquila, the factory workers that are on strike to raise the minimum wage. It's easy for scumbag politicians to bump it up a quarter, 50 cents, or a buck. Because it's coming out of the businessman's pocket, not out of the government revenues, of which there ain't any. Though I'm here to tell you, Ecuador is turning out to be a completely different case because they're shutting down the whole country, not just for a few hours or a day or two either. We're looking at about a month already. So then how'd that happen? And could it happen in other Latin countries like Guatemala, Salvador, Panama, etc., etc.? Well, the difference is the indigenous tribes in Ecuador have joined a coalition, and they have a charismatic leader who obviously never took an econ class. Again, the question is, can it happen elsewhere in Latin America? Well, here's the thing. A place like Guatemala, for example, has got 25 different indigenous tribes. They all want the same thing, you know, improvements in their lives, but they don't much like each other. They all speak different languages, with Spanish, of course, being the national language, but they don't much like each other. In fact, before the conquistadors came, even for a couple hundred years afterward, they were continuously fighting and killing each other for territory. And as it stands now, and at least for the past 30 years I've been down here in Latin America, one particular charismatic indigenous leader has never floated to the top of the food chain. That's not to say there aren't plenty of smart, charismatic indigenous people. Thing is, for a country like Guatemala with 25 different tribes, they all want their guy to be in charge, and none of them trust the other guy's top dog. And with some tribes, there is no top dog. They all have their indigenous organizations and political action group, though there's lots and lots of infighting and jostling for power. And like I said, the individual tribes don't much get along. You can judge that by the fact that in some cases, especially way out in the boonies where the indigenous people have a heavy presence, believe it or not, I've heard firsthand that parents still discourage kids from marrying someone outside their tribe. Hey, I'm not saying I'm clairvoyant, but it doesn't look like there's going to be any kind of indigenous uprising in Central America anytime soon. But as for South America, well, you can see what's happening in Ecuador right now. And believe me, anyone with a half a brain knows the government is dead broke and they'll never be able to comply with those demands. So for Ecuador, anyway, the prognosis is not good. That is, for gringos living there now, and as far as my recommendations for a Plan B landing site for gringos and expats. Oh, and one last thing about Ecuador. Next time you eat one of those shrimp dishes, you know, shrimp, seafood, chances are you'll be eating Ecuadorian shrimp. You know, most of them are infused with chemicals, pesticides, herbicides, and now forever chemicals. But people don't seem to care. They love shrimp. Did you know now that Ecuador is the number one shrimp producer in the world, surpassing China and India, who were previously on top? Yep, I'm talking all you shrimp eaters out there. You know, 90% of all the world's shrimp now is farm shrimped in stagnant swimming pools. And man, are they disgusting looking and stanky. I've been to a few. I've checked them out. When the wind's right, you can smell them from miles away. Though again, you know, you can get regular boat-trolled shrimp if you go down to one of those big markets or a fish market and simply ask the seller where that stuff's coming from. They know. And they'll have piles of five or six kinds of shrimp, different colors too. And there'll always be a pile or two of shrimp that came in on the boats. They're the same price too. To them, though, a shrimp's a shrimp. And when I ask that question, they look at me funny. By the way, when you go out to a restaurant, buy or eat that stuff, unless you buy the very biggest shrimp, you know, the jumbo ones, you're practically guaranteed to get the farm-raised stuff. And that's all you get if you buy from a place like Costco or Walmart. Anyway, Ecuador's disgusting farmed shrimp sector is now number one. And to maintain that goal, shrimp companies are injecting more capital and chemicals. I know you shrimp lovers are happy to hear that. Meanwhile, since it's so economical to produce shrimp in Ecuador, the producers are acquiring more and more land. That means more and more stink when you're driving down the coast, believe me. By the way, according to the manager of La Pantera shrimp farm in Ecuador, his name is Keebler Potón. Keebler, like the cookies. And he does kind of look like the Keebler elf. He says, one reason that shrimp farming is so good in Ecuador, you get a tremendous yield from a really small space. That means they're all pooping and farting in each other's faces. Shrimp do have faces, right? By the way, if you don't know, a hectare is 100 meters by 100 meters, or about 2.5 acres. Anyway, Mr. Keebler, not the cookie guy, says 1 hectare of land produces 1,000 kilograms of beef in 2 years. That's if you got cows. But with the latest, greatest shrimp farming techniques and chemicals, 1 hectare produces 50,000 kilograms of shrimp in just 3 months. You could produce 50 times the weight of beef in shrimp in 1/8 the time. And he says the higher demand for shrimp and inflation is pushing up its price dramatically. In fact, the international price of a pound of shrimp reached $14.96 in March of 2022. Ecuador ships its stanky, chemical-laden shrimp to 40 different countries, coming to a plate near you. I know, I like shrimp too. But I'll tell you, even when I'm at an event or an all-exclusive resort, unless, again, they're those jumbo shrimp, I won't eat any. Because the jumbo shrimp are very difficult to grow in a stagnant pool. Almost all of those are coming from the sea. But man, do people love shrimp. In fact, I'm sure you've noticed, anytime you go to an event, a wedding, whatever, even an all-inclusive resort where the food's free, if any time they've got shrimp on the menu or on the buffet, people dive in and it's the first thing to run out. To some people, the more shrimp they have, the classier the event. Meanwhile, up in the States, you've got the EPA releasing new guidelines for forever chemical contamination. You know those forever chemicals that you've been reading about probably for just the past couple of months. Been all over the news lately. I don't know why it took the idiots in government so long to get alarmed about this. I've been talking about it for years, as long as I've been doing this show. Nearly 12 years now. And yes, the water filter I use and recommend will take out all that junk. Anyway, those forever chemicals are used in a variety of consumer and industrial products, such as nonstick coatings, you know, Teflon kitchenware, to fire retardants in clothes, toys, furniture, and mattresses. The thing is, you know, there's no safe level for that stuff. And it's in every single U.S. waterway and water supply. So it figures it's detectable, along with microplastics, in every single fish and seafood species, too. Man, are we doomed or what? All right, so it's everywhere, but how bad is it in U.S. waters? In studies done on American drinking water, for example, in Philadelphia, guess what they're finding? In basically every big city water supply, too. And most all of that stuff comes from pee and poop, flushed down the toilet and ending up in wastewater treatment plants that can't process it. They just don't have the technology to take that stuff out on a mass scale. Anyway, this report says they found 56 pharmaceutical chemicals, the water supply, to 40 million people. Turns out they monitored 60 major cities in the U.S. for 5 months, one of those cities being Philadelphia. And wow, this will blow your mind. I know this is sickening, but they're finding estrogen, you know, birth control medications, caffeine, antibiotics. They found medicines for epilepsy, acetaminophen, you know, Tylenol, ibuprofen, psychotropic drugs, mood stabilizers, illegal drugs and opioids. They found angina drugs, other heart medications and cholesterol meds, even sex hormones, to name just a few. By the way, that includes practically every drug you take because you pee out residues of that stuff and it flows into the waste management system, which does not filter that stuff up because they don't have the capacity to do it. Then it gets processed and ends up in your faucet again. And some people think we're not doing enough recycling. Anyway, if you want a link to this disgusting report, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Bottom line, you're an idiot if you don't filter your water. So then what about Latin America? Well, I'm sure it would be just as bad down here, but it's not. Why? Because people are not in any way addicted to prescription meds. Nope, they're not on Valium or mood-altering psychotropic drugs. No chemical birth control either. Only a tiny fraction, and mostly the affluent population, take them. It's just not a pill-popping society. But believe me, when you're down here, you better filter your tap water, because the rivers down here are terribly polluted too. Some of them are just clogged with garbage and plastic. It's sad, but the First World went through that phase too, as we discussed on a previous show. Latinos are litterers and polluters. They got that lagtime thing going there too. Though little by little, they are coming around. By the way, where do you think that disgusting stagnant pool water goes after harvesting that contaminated shrimp? South
of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.